This is May 10th, 1904, and I'm at the home of Lawrence and Daisy Campton at 7555 County Road 111, Salida, Colorado. And Lawrence, would you tell me your full name, when you were born, and then kind of read down about your parents and so forth?
Well, my name is Lawrence Roy Campton. I was born October 27, 1916. I was born at Messina, Iowa. My father's name was James H. Campton, and he was born in 1850-something. I don't know where. My mother's full name was Hannah R. Stratton, and her place of birth was in Pennsylvania. You know what the kids knew?
Mm-hmm.
I had no full brothers and sisters. I had half brothers and sisters. I had Hugh and
James,
Charles, and Harry. And I had half sisters as Maud, Olive, Pearl, and
Ruth.
They were all a lot older than I was. And we moved to Salida in June of 1949. And we moved the first place at 402 East 4th. Then we moved her into a duplex on 7th Street. And then we spent a good many years at 924 G Street. And the schools I attended, I went to Badger Township School in Missouri, K County, Missouri, and I attended one year in Kansas, and then we moved to Oklahoma, and I went to country school at Center School, and then graduated from Tonkawa High School, and attended one year at UPS, University Preparatory School, which is now the Northern Oklahoma Junior College. My wife's name Daisy, her maiden name was Newman. And our children, we have Benny L. He was born January the 20th, 1938. Shirley Lorene was born the 8th day of June, 1940. Charles Otis was born on the 7th day of, the 23rd of July, 1947. We have 11 grandchildren.
Can you tell me what your father did?
He was a railroader, but he got struck by lightning and it left him crippled. And in those days, I don't think the railroad even had insurance, because he never, I know, my folks, well, we were dirt poor, you might say. They sold a livery stable in Messina, Iowa, and moved to Missouri and bought it. In fact, I still own the little patch of ground out east of Nevada. But my mother, more or less, supported us. She raised chickens and sold fryers and eggs and made yeast, homemade yeast, and sold it. And he took care of the garden, but he walked with a crutch and a cane. He'd start down the row. He'd have a chair at each end of the field or the row, and he'd use his hoe for a cane. And when he's crutched, he'd hoe down and then sit down and rest, and then go back to the other end. But We were really dirt poor, but my half brothers and sisters, they took better care of my mother than a lot of actual children. They were her stepchildren.
Oh.
They bought her a brand new Model T Ford one time in Kansas City, and hired a big black boy to drive it from Kansas City to Nevada, Missouri, and took her into town, asked her if she could drive a car, and she drove it home. But see, my dad died when I was 8 years old. He was 60 when I was born.
Were you the only child home at the time?
I was the only child my mother ever had. Yeah, the youngest one was Charles, and he was 18 years older than I was.
Oh. Where were you born? Were you born in the hospital or at home?
At home.
I tell everybody I was born in a barn because you went out of the back door of the house right into the livery stable.
I see. Okay, well, Tell me a little bit about your childhood, that things that might stand out.
Well, my childhood, I guess you'd say we always had plenty to eat. We didn't go hungry. And it was out in the country there in Missouri up until the time I was, well, we went to Oklahoma, I guess, when I was about 11 years old, 10, 11 years old. My mother had two sisters living there, and they wanted their baby sister closer to them, so we moved to Oklahoma. But I remember one year for Christmas, my half-sister sent me a great big Victrola, one of these I had to stand on a box to even put a record on them, and I don't know how many records. And I played that thing, and they sent me a model train one time, just a little round track, and had to wind it up. But they was always sending me books. And I didn't have a bad childhood. I didn't have a lot of... One year for Christmas, we had my mother chopped down a big weed and decorated it for a Christmas tree. But we lived in a kind of a community in Missouri where everybody looked after everybody else. If somebody was going to go to town, they'd always check with the other neighbors and see if they needed anything. But I didn't have a lot of stuff. Well, you say a lot of fancy stuff, but I was able to attend school. Started to school one year. 2 days after school started, I was one of the big kids got me to do something. The teacher came up behind me and hit the back of this bench with a stick. Scared me so bad I didn't go back to school until next year.
Oh, my goodness. Do you remember what year of school that was?
Well, it would have probably been about 1922, 23, 21, because I think I started when I was 5 years old. And then, in Missouri, they had a funny system. You started out, one year, every year they taught the first, second, and third grade. I don't know, it's probably not that way now. And then in the country schools, the next year they teach the first, second, third, fifth, and seventh. And then the other year they teach the first, second, third, fourth, sixth, and eighth. And I never did take the seventh grade. I took the eighth grade twice. I took it once in Oklahoma and once in Missouri. Missouri, yeah. But if you started right, you was all right. And I was going right. And then the year I went to school in Kansas, so that followed me up. And I took the first and second grade the same year because I was the only one in the first grade. And I guess I'd been homeschooled pretty well because teacher had me in the first grade for about a couple of months and then moved me up in the second grade. So I must have been a boy wonder or something.
Well, when did you meet your wife?
Well, it was having a basketball tournament. I was going to college in Oklahoma at, what was the name of the place?
Ames, Oklahoma.
Ames, Oklahoma, they're having a basketball tournament. And the Tonkawa High School team was playing there. And the guy that I'd got acquainted with, he'd graduated the same year I did. He was going with a girl from school. And he said, let's go to the basketball tournament. He had a brother that was playing on the team. All right. So I was going with a little neighbor girl out in the country. And I asked her if she'd like to go to the basketball game. And her mother wouldn't let her go. So this guy told me, he said, well, you know, my girlfriend's got a friend that lives at O'Keene, which isn't too far from Ames, and she wants to ride home for Christmas holiday. Okay, that was it.
And that was Daisy, huh?
Yeah. And then she chased me so hard that I finally caught her.
And what year were you married?
1937.
What were you doing at the time?
Farming?
I
was in school.
School?
I was going to college.
Had a paper route.
Had a paper route in the morning, but I was going to college. And she was still in high school. But we managed to survive.
Mm-hmm. So what brought you to Colorado?
Foster Lumber Company. It was a chain outfit. And I went to work for them. I had a wheat crop one year. And I went to work for them more or less to have some income. And then they thought, well, they had a yard in Oklahoma, had 4 yards in Oklahoma at that time. And they that was interested in it, so they transferred me to Norton, Kansas. And Norton, Kansas, I went to Herndon, Kansas. Then from Herndon to Stratton, and then Stratton to here. And I've been here ever since.
And tell me a little bit about Foster Lumber, because most people that live here now would never have heard of Foster Lumber.
Well, it was a big outfit. It was a family-owned affair. And a fellow by the name of Benjamin B. Foster hauled his first load of lumber with ox teams from St. Louis, Missouri to Rexford, Kansas. Right out there in the middle of the prairie. And he unloaded his lumber and he said, this is it. And that's where he started his first lumber yard. And then as they got the yards in Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado, and Oklahoma for a while. But they... Rexford, Kansas, I don't know whether it probably isn't there now, because I don't think the lumber company is even in existence anymore. They had what they call Rexford Farms. Mr. Foster started raising blooded cattle and registered horses on his Rexford farm. But they had us all back to Kansas City, Missouri for, what was it, the 75th anniversary? Mm-hmm. They took all of the lumber managers, hired a train on the Rock Island Railroad. Had the whole train to herself, but it wasn't as a fast train because it stopped and picked up milk cans that it was crossing. But they had quite a big celebration that year. But they came farther west. They finally had a lumber yard here, one at Gunnison, one at Montrose. Then later on, they got one up at Glenwood Springs. And then they even had one in Boulder, but then it was started as a small town lumberyard. That's what Benjamin Foster does. You find him in all these little towns in Kansas, Herndon, Kansas. In fact, there weren't even county seat towns. Cool. Just little wide zone. Herndon, I suppose, had 800 people and still had a lumberyard.
So what did you do then after you were at Foster Lumber? Did you leave when it left, or were
no,
you?
No, I left before.
Before?
No, I sold cars and had a coke route. What else did I do? Worked for the county most of the time. Went to work for the county road department. That's where I wound up.
Well, you were chamber manager.
Oh, yeah, I was chamber manager for a couple of years. That didn't pan out too good. I couldn't lie good enough. Same way with selling cars. But, I went to work for the county and worked for them for pretty near 20 years in the road department. I'm still working for the county.
And tell us what you're doing now.
I'm the veteran service officer. I take care of veterans affairs, help them get compensation if they've got any coming, get them to the hospital. We have two vans we use, and two fellows are going back to Cincinnati, Ohio, after tomorrow to get another new van. The county's been real good, though. The commissioners have bought two vans for us. The first one was cost $8,800. That's brand new. The second one was $10,000. This year it was $11,000. But that's pretty cheap for a new van at that. And we put we put 60,000 miles on them last year on the two we had.
You might tell a little bit about being in the service, where you were, and how that affected you and Daisy's life.
Well, it sure raised heck with our living arrangements. When I was in Europe, participated in several of the battles over there, got captured during the Battle of the Bulge. In fact, I did made a remark to my youngest son. I said, I'd like to go to that World War II memorial dedication. He said, well, let's go. Then I changed my mind. I think I would be a physical wreck if I had to ride about 2 or 3 days to get to Washington, D.C. But we managed to survive on that, too.
Benny and Shirley were both in school.
Yeah. And Chuck was born after we... Well, we was living in Chatton when he was born, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And when did you get out of the service then?
October the 31st, 1945. The war was over. I had 127 points. They was kicking them out with 55 points at that time. When I got out of prison camp, I only weighed 92 pounds, and I wasn't in too good a shape. So they kept me around until they got me built up a little better.
How did you feel you were treated as a prisoner?
You shouldn't ask me that.
Oh.
When we first was captured, we had a bunch of SS troopers that had been, well, a lot of them only had one hand or one arm, one leg off, and they delegated them from frontline troops to prison camp. They were absolutely mean. They just loved to hurt you. And then when they, down towards the tail end, well, they brought in a bunch of the old-timers, World War I veterans, and they were a little better, because they knew what it was. But I was they had a prisoner of war camp, a German prisoner of war camp at Tonka, Oklahoma, when I got home. I had a 60-day convalescent furlough. And I got to visiting with the guys, and they had a alfalfa mill right across the road from where she was living. And I'd go over and visit with the guards that bring those guys in that was working at the alfalfa mill. And I'd go out and started going out to the PX at the prison camp, because you could buy malted milks for a nickel and anything else. And in those days, you wore your uniform if you was in the military. And I was sitting there one day talking to a couple of the guards that I'd got acquainted with. These three civilians came in with the camp commander and sat down right behind us. And the camp commander asked one of them, says, how does the treatment and the food that we give our prisoners here, what compared to what our boys got in Germany? And this guy said, well, he said, it's very same. The food's a little bit better. And I just turned around and I says, you're a blankety-blank liar. Well, the camp commander said, soldier, you better apologize or I'll have you in the stockade. And I said, I don't care. He's a liar. I just got out of one of their dadgum camps. The food wasn't, well, it just wasn't any. The medical care was the best we could get. And for, we had a British major who was a surgeon and an American medical doctor who was a captain that, of course, they gave their word that they would not try to escape if they just let them roam the camp and take care of the guy. Mm-hmm. But this, I spent, well, the last 2 weeks I was there, I was in the, what they called a hospital. It was just a building. If they moved you out of the double bunks on the side into the center of the single bunk, you knew you was on the road out, because that's where they put the guys that were dying. And when I was liberated, I didn't really know what was going on, but I do remember there was a nurse came up with them, with some of the doctors, and they was going down the line. They had us laying out on the side of the railroad track on the embankment. I was on a stretcher, I think. And the doctor, I heard him say, well, let this guy go. He said, he's too far gone. We'll take the others. And I heard this nurse say, no, he is not. Said, he's going to be fine. And they was talking about me. But I laid in that hospital for 2 months before they even started to send me home. And I think when I got home, I weighed, 127 pounds,
not
something like
much.
That. I sent her home a picture of me that I took in Paris, one of these little, we used to walk into a little booth and put a quarter in a slot and get a picture. Her sister son said, you better not carry that. That's not him.
Well, was part of the food problem because everybody in Germany didn't have food, or was it just because you were a prisoner, or do you know?
Well, the German soldiers, they didn't have good food, but they had, what they had was nourishing. They had a stew. They carried their mess kit was a round bucket. And they'd carry that stew in it. And it was it had meat and everything, vegetable and everything. What we would get for breakfast, they called it coffee. All of us, they'd burn barley and pour hot water over it. And then for lunch, Sometimes you'd get a bowl of soup, and once in a while there'd be a little piece of horse meat floating around in it. And then for supper that night, you get one slice of bread. Sometimes they'd put all it was lard. They called it margarine. And that's all we ate on. And when they started us out of there on those boxcars, they threw a loaf of bread in for, well, it was enough for about every 10 men, one loaf of bread. Of course, the thing that helped, the bread was heavy. They made it out of sawdust, usually.
You're kidding.
You know, they use sawdust in their bread. That's enough of that.
Okay, well, tell me about after you were at Foster Lumber, and is there any incidents of any of the places you worked that would be of interest to the people here or that are might be listening to this?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of people don't even know that we ever had a coke plant here at one time. It's over there where the city garage is now, I guess you call it. Chuck Furphy, I worked for him for a couple of years. We'd bottle coke. He paid us $20 a week to work in the plant, and then we'd run a route, too.
And that was Chuck Furphy?
Chuck Furphy. You know Chuck Furphy. Mm-hmm. And I sold cars for Clyde Wilkinson for a couple of years. No, I guess it didn't sell that long.
And where was his place of business?
Right there where High Country Bank is downtown, right on the corner.
Ooh, okay.
You know, Clyde Wilkinson, the Ford garage was there, and behind it was Costello's Bar and Tavern.
That's on West 2nd and G.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed the time I put in working for the county. I like to be outdoors. And Clarence Fowler was our road foreman, and Joe Reno was road foreman for this district, and Joe Reno's pet project was Ute Trail, and Clarence Fowler's pet project was Chalk Creek. Of course, that's when all they had was a railroad grade up there. And anytime we didn't have something real pressing to do, we'd go up and work on the Chalk Creek Railroad Gate. But we had a nice crew to work with and enjoyed it, just like a picnic for me. But
I know that you were instrumental in starting Fib Arc. Could you? I think, weren't you? Or
no, I didn't help. I didn't get it started. In fact, the first two or three years I was here, I'd go fishing that day. And then I got interested in it and started running in it.
And when you say running in it, you mean boating in it.
Boating in it, racing in it. And I enjoyed that, too, because it was something. Well, I guess I'd done pretty good at it. I ran 8 years and took third four times and won it once. But
what year did you win it? Do you remember?
1959. Mm-hmm. That's a long time ago.
That was.
But I've got several awards since I've been here that I'm real proud of. I was Rocky Mountain Western Division Elk of the Year for the Elks, and I got the award for the Service Officer of the Year in 1999. It's down to the office.
That's for the veterans?
Veteran Service Officer of the Year. And I've got several awards from DAV for working with the volunteers. In fact, I got a wristwatch from the Elk a couple of years ago for volunteer services. But I like to think that I've made a difference. Because this job I've got now, it's just primarily to help people, mainly veterans. Well, it is veteran. But and I enjoy doing it.
Well, tell me a little bit about the organizations, how they've changed through the years that you've belonged to. Can you tell me anything, or have they changed that much?
Well, it used to be when you started through the chairs at the Elks, you could plan on 7 years before you got to be exalted ruler, which is the highest office. And now, some of these guys are exalted ruler after they've been in the chairs maybe 2 years. 1 year, we had one guy started 1 year and was exalted ruler the next year. They just don't seem to take interest in it. The Masonic Lodge is a little different. They still have their lines over there, although it's getting hard to get officers, I think. And the veterans groups, the American Legion, they've had the same commander now for several years because they can't get anybody to take it. The VFW is getting in the same situation. And the DAV, we have four meetings a year. We meet quarterly, if we think of it. But Gene Brodus and I keep that going because that's where we get these vans, is to the disabled American veterans. But like I say, I belong to a lot of organizations, but I really enjoy them all. I don't attend too much. I used to never miss an Elks meeting, but it's too hard for me to get up and downstairs anymore. Mm-hmm. And I don't attend Blue Lodge as often as I should. We go to shrine parties once in a while. I tell you, all organizations, I think, are in the same situation. It's getting hard to get people to get more to work.
So you're in the Shriners, too?
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me anything about the Shriners?
Well, I and George Koenig are the only two charter members left alive of the original group that formed the Monarch Shrine Club. And I joined went through the York Rite, and of course somebody asked me if I wanted to join the Shrine. I said, why should I join something, go to Pueblo and join it, that I'm never going to attend a meeting? What would you join if we come up to Slide and put the work on? Yeah. So there was about, I think there was 22 or 24 of us joined at the same time. But I and George Koenig are the only two left, and that's been over 50 years ago. Tom Corlett was one, and Burl Williams, the truck driver, he was one. But I and George Koenig are the only two surviving members of the Charter Shrine. But the Shrine is a different organization. They're primarily for crippled children, and they support this crippled children.
And Burn.
Well, yeah, Burns. They support the Crippled Children's Hospital in Salt Lake City. And all these fundraisers they have, that money goes to the Crippled Children's. But they're a worthwhile organization, and these people that complain about the circus, about abusing the animals, the circus hadn't been making them too much money. They had this deal just last weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the sports show. I didn't go because it just, it's hard for me to get around. I run out of wind. But if people would support the Shrine more, it's a worthwhile organization. It's a fun organization, too. They like to party, but they still do a lot of good.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the social life in Salida, how it's changed. Or has it changed?
Well, I don't know whether it's changed or not. It's maybe a little different. When we first moved here, back in Stratton, we had what we called the Stratton. What do we call them? That little club we had. Just four couples, wasn't it? Got, no, more than four couples. Yeah. And we had a little party. We'd meet once a month and have a covered dish dinner and play cards, visit. And as soon as she hit town, she said, I'm going to start another organization like that here. And she started. And I can even name you the ones that was in it originally. Fred and Laura Nylander.
Now, what's the last name?
Nylander.
Nylander.
You know,
okay.
He worked for public service. Ivan and Reba Porter. George and Wilmoth Everett.
Everett.
Mm-hmm. Jim and Fran Limbers. And
okay.
Us.
Mark and Dorothy.
Mark
and Dorothy.
Oh, and Mark and Dorothy Kern. How many have I got there?
One, two, three, four, five couples.
There must have been somebody else.
Be six couples altogether.
Well, Gladys and George Armstrong in the beginning.
But they didn't last long.
No, well, he passed away.
I don't remember. Yeah, Gladys and George Armstrong. And the funny part of it was, they were all the men were Masons but one, and Ivan Porter, and he had already petitioned the lodge, just as an accident.
So basically, you got together for a dinner and
got together, covered dish dinner, and
played cards,
and played cards, and just had a good time. And it was a real congenial bunch. I remember the first time we had it, they give you a little slip of paper, and usually it's have on a urette. Now you had to wash the dishes.
The men, it was the men.
Men that had to wash the dishes. And the first night we ever had it, we was living on G Street. George Everett had to do the dishes, and that just he never let us forget that. But it was a real congenial bunch. We had a lot of fun. Then for quite a while, every spring we'd go up to Cripple Creek to the melodrama, the same bunch. And but a lot of those are gone now too.
Mm-hmm. Most of them.
Did TV change some of that social life, you think, in Salida?
I think it has. I think TV has practically ruined a lot of organizations. You take the the Elks on an initiation night, they'd have to put extra seats along there for the people to sit in. And now you're darn lucky to get 20 people, even when they're a nation candidate. But I think TV and outside entertainment. And then in those days, the only place they had a New Year's Eve party was at the Elks Lodge. And you had to belong to the Elks to go to it.
Mm-hmm. Remember that. And those are some pretty good parties.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that you can think of that stories you'd like to tell? Or
I can't think of anything.
Where was the Chamber of Commerce when you were the manager? Where was it located?
Right there behind the senior center in that little building there. Right there where the fish pond was.
East 3rd?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about the fish pond? That's something I haven't heard anybody mention.
Well, and that was also a weather reporting station.
Mm.
We took the temperature and the high and the low and moisture, measured the wind, rainfall. The old timers remember the fish pond. It was that big old concrete tank. But one thing that happened when I was manager of the chamber was got a phone call one day, and it was somebody from the police department said, "We just arrested 3 kids that had a big fish that caught out of the fish pond." Some girl across had been standing over there across the street watching him. This one boy sat up on the railing, and pretty quick she seen him do like that, and he jumped off and ran over and got in the car, and she could see this fish's tail hanging out of his pant leg. So she just called the police, and they caught him down here below town. And I went to the hearing they had on him, and I don't remember who the judge was at the time. Anyway, he told the game warden that was present. So I remember he told the judge, he said, "Judge," he said, "I want you to remember one thing. If you say 30 days in jail, that's it." He said, "There's no parole on a game violation." So I think he fined those guys $500 apiece. But that was a pretty expensive fish, and they didn't get to keep the fish. They used to have some big fish in there. You know. But the well was there. They had to have a well to pump well water into it because the chlorine of water would kill the fish. The well's probably, well, it's someplace under the senior center.
It was quite an attraction, as I remember.
Oh, yeah,
tourist
it was.
Attraction.
Those big fish swimming around there. And then a couple of years, they put a couple of these big albinos in there, and they were a real attraction. But I guess the senior center is more of an attraction than the fish were.
Well, anything else that you can think of about? Can you think of any characters around town that?
Characters? The only character I can think of is Fred Paquette, and he's dead now. Fred and I, we used to get into all kinds of troubles. We remember Fury said, not too long ago, we had a little earthquake here, shook the place out here. But several years ago, they had a pretty good one over at Cripple Creek, over at, over on the Rio Grande. Creed. So Fred and I, we decided we'd have a little excitement. So we got a hold of Jake Jock and told him what we was going to do. And he said, well, when you get ready to do it, you let me know so I can be out of town. And we started a rumor. Had anybody been up the crater? In those days, you had to walk to the crater from the backside, you know. Now I guess you can drive clear up on the rim.
Now, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Jock was the forest ranger here, yeah. Right? And the crater is up behind Tenderfoot?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We asked him, said, look, it cracks in the bottom, there's steam coming out of it. And we sent off and got four or five of these big 5-inch aerial bombs, and we had 5 gallon of crude oil, and we had some sulfur, and a couple of old tires, and some old oil filters. We was going to go up there and set off some of those aerial bombs and build a big old smudge down in the bottom of the crater. We got to thinking, you know, there's only one way in and one way out. And in spite of heck and high waters, everybody, instead of running for the hills, the other side, they're going to come up, see what's happening. They're going to catch us coming out. We used to have a lot of fun. One day, when I had the service station over here, he had a funny noise in one of his freewheeling hubs. And I said, well, where does it do it most? And he said, well, when I hit the railroad track on 7th Street, that's when the narrow gauge is still in. Well, I said, let's take it up and drive it across. All right. So I'm laying across the hood trying to figure out which wheel it is. And Harry Cable and Harold Thonoff, chief of police and sheriff, was coming down the street. Cable says, what in the heck are those two guys doing now? Thonoff says, I don't know, but we're not going to stop to find out. We both had cabins up in the turret district, and we used to spend a lot of time up there. Had some good old parties up there. Fred's no longer with us. But all in all, I've enjoyed my life here in the mountains. My only regret was I didn't come here when I was 2 years old. Of course, it's like Fred said one day, if we'd have known one another when he was 16, we'd have both been dead before we was 20. And he's probably right.
If you'd been together, huh? Well, I've really enjoyed this, and I don't know about... if I think of anything else. Oh, can you tell me anything about the swimming pool?
No, I don't know much about the swimming pool. I do know, of course, this happened not too many years ago when Mac Bevington wanted to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fathers didn't want to sell it. And if they'd have sold it to him, it would have been, they probably had a nice big motel and convention center there, because Mac Bevington had big ideas for it. But
didn't that go to a vote of the people?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think yes, they voted yes. The people.
And they voted it down.
And they sort of mm-hmm. voted it down.
Mm-hmm. And you remember when that was?
I remember when we first came here, they had those old cabins all around there that came down from Camp Hale.
Mm-hmm. Was that where they came from?
Yeah, they were Army camp.
Mm. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I don't even know what they ever done with them.
I
guess they just tore them down. I don't think they moved them out. And you know, when they just rebuilt the swimming pool recently, down here at Howard, they took those rafters down there to make a grid. Well, they've got them a nice new building, but they didn't use those rafters, and the rafters are gone someplace. That cost them something, too, to get them hauled down there and save money for the city when they was taking them off.
Was there anything else you can think about? Any big events that you can remember in Salida, or storms, or besides the earthquake?
The big storm about 3 years ago, 52 inches, right out here in my front yard. And here, a good many years ago, we had a blizzard on the first day of May. I mean, that was a doozy, too. It's been several years ago because Morse Current was in the grocery store, and Mrs. Parker Wilmington come in to get a bunch of groceries for their, well, they probably had a lot of tourists, but, and she was afraid to go home in that snowstorm. So Mort's called me, and he led, and I followed in our jeeps, and we got her home all right.
Well, that's something you were involved in, the jeep tours.
Jeep tours, jeep patrol. I was one of the charter members of the jeep patrol.
And what did they do?
Search and rescue.
Mm-hmm. That kind of the beginning of search and rescue?
Well, yeah, and that's when the search and rescue got started. And then jeep tours. Well, a guy by the name of Mike Sauter was manager of the chamber, and he came up with this idea of a jeep tour in August or July, I guess it was. And I don't know how many people we had a whole bunch of people, charged them $1.50 apiece. And we would have broke even, because all we had for lunch, we'd cut everybody a fork and stick and gave them a couple of weenies and a big old spoon full of pork and beans and made two or three big old pots of coffee. And we wouldn't have went in the hole if Max Sauter hadn't made a long-distance phone call from Pitkin. That made us go in the hole. Then we started having two a year, and then several years we had three. And then when this jeep tour outfit took it over, well, that ruined it, because they was charging so dadgum much just for... But my grandson up in Frisco's, he bought another rafting company a while back, this Timberwolf outfit down here below town. And my son, his dad told me yesterday, he said he's got one they call Saddle Paddle. You can ride a horse a half a day and then paddle for a half a day.
Hmm.
You're starting something new. But that rafting business has got to be a big deal.
Well, if there's nothing else, I really thank you for your time and interest in doing this for us.
Okay.
And thank you too, Daisy.
Maybe she can add something to it.
Would you like to add something, Daisy?
No.
Really?
Sounds real good to me.
Mm-mm. Okay. You're sure welcome to.
No, thank you.
You might tell me about family life, how it's changed.
Well, when the nest is empty, it definitely changes.
Get her that poem. Her son gave us a poem yesterday.
Yeah.
And it sure fits us. But we keep the hummingbirds fed. We got a cat that had some kittens out here someplace. Let's keep her fed.
Oh, it's a poem.
Mm-hmm. Poem.
It isn't that we talk so much, sometimes the evening through, you do not say a word to me, I do not talk to you, you sit beside your reading lamp, I like my easy chair, and it is joy enough for me to know that you are there. It isn't that we go so much, sometimes we like to roam and visit where our children live, but best of all is home. I sew a bit or play for you some song we like to share, and it is joy enough for me to know that you are there. It isn't that you tell to me the things I've come to know. It goes too deep for words to tell how love through years can grow. You only have to touch my hand to know how much I care. But it is joy enough for me to know that you are there. Oh, that's great.
It was cute.
How many years have you been married?
67.
67.
67 years. Wow.
In March.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anything else?
No.
Well, thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.